This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio, and we listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes, and maybe even to find your next favorite artist or band. And if you like what you hear, make sure that you rate and review the show so other music lovers can find it. This is FUV Live Sessions with Sarah Kinsley. I'm Megan Aftermat, and I'm here with host Kara Manning at WFUV. Kara, you were just telling me before the mic was hot that something that's so special about Sarah is really what she means to her fans. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
You know, very much so. We were actually discussing about this incredible fan base that certain artists just cultivate, like Biba Doobie and Leve and, you know, and Muna and, you know, Boy Genius is an example. Sarah Kinsley is very much akin to that. You know, she's local. She's from Connecticut. She went to Columbia University. She has really made her own way. She started, as many artists do, as a classical musician. So she speaks a certain language already for herself as a songwriter, but then she's expanded beyond that. And I will honestly say that this was an interview where I wanted to stop looking at the clock and really just talk to her for hours, because she's fascinating, really, really smart, really smart about film, really smart about what she wants out of her own career, out of her own songwriting. And I just thoroughly enjoyed not only her music, but Sarah as a person. And I'm really excited for her and for Escaper and what the future will bring for her.
Amazing. What are we going to hear first in this session?
This is Sarah Kinsley for FUV Live Sessions and her band with Last Time We Never Meet Again.
So this is it. Our lives were only a dream of some good thing then, and whatever it is now, holding on to something you don't really want. Is it me? Is it you? Shut me up.
Kara Manning on FUV Live Sessions, and that is Sarah Kinsley and her band with Last Time We Never Meet Again from her debut album, Escaper. New York is Sarah's adopted hometown. She's a Columbia grad and has also mastered the alchemy of going viral on TikTok in 2021 with her song, The King. That was an education. And a viral song doesn't mean automatic success. Sarah has worked very hard to sustain and surpass that moment. And that has brought her to this place of her debut album 3 years later. Sarah has released 4 EPs, and with Escaper, this gifted songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and producer has created an album that reflects her own complex passage of loving, letting go, and moving on. And Sarah, welcome to FUV Live Sessions in Studio A. It's so lovely to see you. I'm so impressed by all you have accomplished in a mere 3 years.
Thank you. That was a hefty, really nice intro. Thank you so much.
It is marvelous just sort of taking in your very quick journey to where you are now. You just turned 24 in July.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the fact that on every birthday, you write a letter to your future self. And then you go back and read them and sort of marvel about how far you have come.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you wrote to yourself this year that you feel comfortable sharing?
I will say I did predict the future because I wrote in my last year's birthday that I hoped my brother would be in love this year. And I did predict it. So that was like a really sweet thing. It's always nice to open those letters on my birthday because you don't remember what you write a year ago. I don't check it. And that was really sweet on one front. And musically, I think I try not to put too much pressure on myself. So I sort of wished that the album would be everything I wanted it to be. And it was. So it was kind of a good wish.
Escaper is not dissimilar from those letters to yourself because every song kind of captures you at a particular stage in your life. You have said, as we came into the studio, that you have been sitting on some of these songs for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
What is the earliest song that you wrote that has made its way onto this album?
One of the earliest songs that I wrote was either Nights or another song called There Was a Room. And those were the sort of first instances of like something bubbling. This was around the time I was still writing my last EP, Ascension. So I kind of knew that those songs weren't the right fit for that EP, but I wanted them to be contained in something else. Yeah, it's strange to sit on the music for a long time because it kind of exists and has its own life for a while. But Nights and There Was a Room I was writing in probably January or February of 2023, and yeah, it just feels like a ways away now.
Last Time We Never Meet Again is a really interesting song for many reasons. This album, a lot of people who sit in the very seat you're in that I have been speaking to over the last few years since the pandemic, mm-hmm. grief has become a constant theme in a lot mm-hmm. of albums. You sort of have a two-tiered kind of grief that you're addressing on Escaper, mm-hmm. both the actual loss of a friend who passed away,
mm-hmm.
and also the cutting of ties with somebody who possibly was toxic or the two of you no longer connected in the way you wanted to. Last Time We Never Meet Again is about the latter, mm-hmm. about sort of disengaging from an unhealthy friendship.
Mm-hmm.
How hard was that song to write, and how difficult is it always to perform it over and over again? Because in a weird way, you would never quite release yourself from that betrayal.
It's true. It's kind of like a weird Sisyphus thing.
Yeah,
of like
it is.
Putting out the song over and over, playing it for weeks and months and hopefully years. I think honestly, it was very easy to write because I was very angry at the time. And I think anger is it's a very easy emotion to hold and bestow upon yourself. And at least as a songwriter, it's incredibly easy to write exactly what you think when you're angry because you don't filter yourself, you don't hold back, and anger can kind of allow you to unleash everything that you would maybe previously hold back. And so Last Time was very easy to write because I was just in a place of indulging in snarky comments. You know, I hope you get everything you wanted. I can play the villain, I can play the villain in the next life. All these things that are slightly cruel and, ironic intentions and these throwaway comments that you say but you don't mean to someone. But it's funny now because I look back on that song with a lot of sweetness, because that song wasn't meant to demonize somebody. It was meant to be a celebratory instance of our friendship. So it's you know, it has these wonderful synths and drums and sounds that just took a while for me to find and craft, because it was meant to be an homage to a friendship that fizzled out. It was meant to be a sort of stamp of this moment in time where I felt on top of the world knowing this other person, and the kind of fall and descent from that almost has everything and nothing to do with the song, because it's came out of anger but was meant to be, I don't know, a memorial of like love and true friendship in a way.
You know, and I think it's interesting because there's not enough discussion about how the loss of a platonic friendship
mm-hmm.
is just as deeply psychically damaging as the end of a romantic relationship. And
yeah.
the fact that you actually seized upon this in this song is really striking to me.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the album is about platonic love for me. There's a lot of celebration of platonic love on other songs that I wrote on the album. And of course, a lot of the grief that was felt through the loss of a real friendship, a tangible loss. Yeah, loss and platonic love specifically are just strange, because it's like grief is like the love that just never ends. So what you're saying about, you know, the Sisyphus cycle of playing these songs over and over and over again, it's like, it's a weird process, because I want to immortalize these people in my life. I want to honor that love, but then you have to, you know, kind of make yourself go through it eternally until whenever, you know, and it's, yeah, it's quite difficult, but worth talking about.
It's funny, the lyric on Last Time We Never Meet Again that jumped out at me is, I hope I hear your name and feel absolutely nothing. Let me be free of you. And and at some point, I'm wondering when this song will morph, how it's been morphing as you play it in various sets as you go on in your career and your life. It's interesting. It's a really, really powerful song.
Thank you.
And you had addressed the friend that you had lost who passed away, who was it somebody you had known in university or
mm-hmm.
beforehand?
Mm-hmm.
And I believe both Glint and Starling sort of, is that those songs in particular surround that particular friend?
I mean, I think it's strange, because you can, if I look at the music and I very truthfully say to you, well, they could all be about her,
they
you
yeah,
know, you
exactly.
could, that's the whole point of Glint, is that it's like, if you don't think too hard about it, almost everything in life can like guide you back to a person you miss,
right.
you know, it's just like a perception thing. But I think more tangibly so, like Glint and Starling, Beautiful Things, and maybe one other. Those three specifically are about this
ask
friend.
Her name?
Yeah, her name's Jane.
Jane, what did you love about Jane?
Jane was is a musician. Like, she makes incredible music, and the first ever performance that I did at Columbia was at St. Paul's Chapel in the basement for a Postscript, and I was such a shy performer. I still feel like I am in some ways, but I was, you know, classically trained. I had no understanding of what it meant to be somebody who could galvanize people or lift people through performance. Because I understood that through an orchestra and through, you know, piano, but those worlds are specific about how you celebrate music, and specific about how it feels to experience it in the larger collective. And I met her very early on in college, and she was very bold and sort of incredibly charismatic in a way that's like terrifying. And she was playing, they had an open mic night, and she was like, you gotta come, you gotta bring a song. Like, I'm gonna play a song that I just wrote with my friend, and you gotta come, it's next week. And I was like, okay. And I literally went home. I spent 3 days writing a song, and it was the first ever song that I ended up releasing under my own name. And I brought it to the open mic, and she went up, and then I went up after her. It was a room of like 40 people. I thought I was so nervous. I was unbelievably nervous. And that was, I guess, 6-ish years ago.
So that was that the fall? The song The Fall? Or?
It was a song called Wine-Stained Lips, which was really old and wasn't tied to any project. It was just the first song that I just kind of released.
So Jane is really the person who kind of pushed you to be where you are now.
Totally. And a very fearless producer as well. made her own music under the name, God, it's like a weird twist on an old Grimes album, and I just, there was an old thing called Misanthropocene, and her name is Misanthropopocene. Really good music, actually, if you want to ever play it.
But, oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. And I think this leads us naturally to Glint, which is very much inspired by Jane. I'm so happy to have Sarah Kinsley here for our FUV live sessions. I'm Kara Manning. And very quickly, before we go into the song, please introduce your band, which is made up of some Columbia grads.
Yes, my band... They're just incredible people. On the drums, we have Zach Coe, and on the guitar, Dea Milo, and the synth and keys, Jane Packnia. I met Dea and Jane in school, and Zach kind of joined us a little bit later, and it's just been incredible playing with them.
From her album Escaper, this is Sarah Kinsley with Glint. That was Sarah Kinsley and her band with Glint I'm Kara Manning with FUV Live Sessions, and Sarah is here in Studio A today. It is such a privilege to meet with somebody so talented. You were born in California. You grew up in both Connecticut and Singapore, which I find interesting. You went to Columbia. You're a producer yourself, but you chose to co-produce Escaper with John Congleton.
Yeah.
When you look at what you learned at Columbia in music theory, and then you look at what that education has been yourself, teaching yourself production, and then also having the advantage of working with somebody like John.
Yeah.
How do you weigh that education?
The thing is, like, the degree that I did was a very general music thing, but I got to dabble in things like music theory and production. I kind of got to take a few classes and sound art, peering into what graduate students were doing. And that part of my education, the sound art program and seeing what grad students were doing and kind of exploring audio production, that was the most fulfilling part of my education. I'm really grateful for it. And it's also just, it's a massive privilege that I was able to just study music in school. I thought for a long time I would maybe need a business degree as well or some kind of other thing to compound it with something meaningful, quote unquote. And within production and songwriting too, the music theory sometimes can be incredibly stifling because when you speak this language of theory and when you see music and not just hear it, but you see music as this sort of mathematical thing, it can be very limiting because I'll sit down and play one chord and your brain knows exactly where to go next. And you know exactly what has historically been done. You know what most songs do. You know, you have what's taught to be correct necessarily, you know, perfect chords, things that are, there's very notably a major and a minor, a perfect and imperfect. And I always had a lot of trouble growing up with that binary because it's just so not useful, I think. But then again, it's also kind of nice to know what chords you're playing, you know, as a way of analyzing yourself. But within production, it's so subconscious probably what I feel that I'm sure it seeps into decisions that John and I made together.
Did you choose to, I mean, he obviously has worked with people you admire like Angel Olsen, St. Vincent. Did you make that choice? I really want to be able to do this with someone else, because I know having that independence of being your own producer is great.
Yeah.
But why for Escaper did you want to work with him?
I mean, yeah, I did miss it, to be fair, quite a lot. The process of also just not speaking to anyone and just thinking. Yeah. And when you work with someone else, you have to be expressive. You have to understand how to communicate. But John has worked on and made some of my all-time favorite records. The All Mirrors by Angel Olsen is in probably my top three albums of all time if I had to make that decision. And I didn't even, this is going to maybe sound worse than I wanted to, but I didn't choose him consciously beforehand. I made a list for my team of a bunch of albums that I love just based on production, not really looking into who had made them, just based on the sound and what I loved. And he'd made 3 or 4 out of 10.
Wow.
And without me knowing.
Is there a specificity to what, when you say sound, what are you hearing that you're trying to describe?
I guess, for example, like with the Angel Olsen album, the way that they manipulated and created strings within that sonic atmosphere was some of the most genius, incredible stuff I've ever heard. The way that her voice blends and kind of floats through you throughout that entire album, the way the drums hit and the, you feel them within your soul, like really deep within you. And I just loved every aspect of that album. I wouldn't change a thing about it. But the sort of like building of that universe, that's what I really wanted out of a collaborator. I always felt the one limitation of working alone was that the only vessel for the music to come out of is me. And so I wanted smashing drums. I wanted the grandeur. I wanted the bigness. And I felt like he was a really great partner to have to create that.
I love that. You also work with Griffin Goldsmith of Dawes on drums, Zach Ray of Death Cab for Cutie on bass, Warpaint's Stella Mozgawa on drums, Adrian Pope and other on violin and other string artists. You also arrange strings yourself. And you worked with the great Cicely Ballston, who has worked a lot with David Bowie in mastering. Was this all through John or people, that, again, that you came in with a list of this is who I love?
Cicely, I've worked with for a few EPs now, and I don't know exactly how we met. And I just, even though I am a producer and have mixed music, mastering is just one part of the equation that I just won't understand. But I loved the way that she made my music sound and the way it was clear and precise. And so we knew each other already, but John pulled everybody together for the record. And it was incredible to watch Stella and Griffin work, because percussion is really the place that I'm farthest from as a musician. It's something I don't understand a lot of exactly when I'm trying to say, oh, okay, I want this kind of sound. And with Nights particularly, Stella played on that song and she came in. And I remember we had tried to map out the drums digitally, because I had gone into it saying, okay, John, I think I want the sounds to all be electronic, or, you know, maybe we can use some a drum machine of some sort. And we had tried to build it and it just sucked. I mean, it sounded horrible. And he was like, I think we need something with a bit more life. And so Stella came in and she was so cool and so awesome. And she just listened to the song many times and then just ripped it out. And she is just very technical and almost, it was like a strange kind of experimentalness to the song that I would never have made for myself. And it was incredible to watch and listen to live. But yeah, they're both really incredible drummers. And Zach Ray too, who played bass and guitar and was just, yes, really incredible.
Wow. You have described Nights as being an angry song.
Yes.
Yes. You are very outspoken in your anger about the music industry still kind of confining the number of women who can produce. You know, I was looking at the Annenberg Center statistics for 2022 that only 3.4% of women are still producing.
Okay,
isn't it?
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
But and only 14% are songwriters. Women.
Wow, I didn't know that,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, which is just as grim.
Well, you know, it's progress. When I started, it was 2%.
There you go. So, well, because you entered the field, so it's an additional 1%. But,
yeah.
But not to diminish this,
no,
but
thanks.
I understand. I think that in speaking to Brittany Howard earlier this year and speaking to a lot of other...
I love her.
Again, very outspoken about the fact that you've got to get women into the room.
Yeah.
And you have to open those opportunities. When you, given the fact that you are a producer, would you like to eventually produce others?
The thing is, I don't actually know if I want to yet. I'm curious too. I'm curious about a lot of where I'll be in music, but... You know, I wanna go away and like score films. I wanna, you know, write for other people and maybe produce. I think it's strange because my love for production came from a sort of more self-centered view, which was that I wanted to know how I could change myself through production and change what I heard and what I wanted to be. And so production in a weird way for me is, for producers who mainly produce other people, that is a tool for world building. But for me specifically, it was like an added mask and disguise, a way to become myself. So it's way more personal because everything that I've learned in production has to do with what I believe fits in my universe as an artist, you know? So thinking about doing that for other people is kind of challenging because I'm like, I don't even know if I'd be good at it, you know?
Well, and you're still trying to figure out who you are too,
yeah,
as an artist. You're that, I mean, what you're creating now, you're still in the very, you're in the beginning stages of it. There's so,
yeah,
much more that you're going to be doing.
I keep forgetting that.
I know, but yeah, because you're quite visionary about where you want to be. It's all those letters you are writing to yourself.
Yeah, totally.
So
yeah,
it's interesting. You're very generous on TikTok. You share a lot of yourself, a lot of your process.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, The King kind of blew up very quickly, almost maybe before you were ready to be sort of to have that pressure of being able to churn out something,
mm-hmm,
to match that viral moment. The King was what, 2021?
Yes.
There's almost like a performance persona that a musician has. And now there is also a social media persona that,
yeah,
some that you might choose. What is the challenge of that, of finding who is that person who walks on stage and performs? Who is that person who is on TikTok and,
yeah,
like responding to listeners?
Yeah.
Where, Sarah, do you fit into that,
yeah,
paradigm?
It's funny because I never thought about my music as a project or like something that I actively did almost. It was just like the output. of who I was musically. And so the way that I got started on social media, I mean, first of all, I think all of it and what we do is inherently performative, and it's social media has kind of weirdly eroded the barrier between what's authentic life and what feels authentic. Everything just, you don't know what's real anymore. And I think musically sometimes that can be challenging because, you know, even stuff that I share of early on demos, I still want it to feel kind of perfect. I don't want it to be too raw. And there's a fear of that rawness sometimes that it's almost like too close to the source. But I very much feel like who I am on stage and who I am online are pretty equal and the same. But I do find that I like to invite people into the world that I'm building. So I love to share little tiny bits of production. I love to show how sounds, you know, become something. But I don't like to give too much. It's almost like a magician's secret thing where I also feel like holding a part of yourself back is interesting and healthy for me as well. But yeah, social media is a strange, strange beast and a really weird tool.
Right.
But it's also, you know, I'm here talking to you because of it.
And something that your icon, Sarah Vaughan, never had to deal with.
I know, it's hilarious to think about people like promoting their own records like this.
Yeah.
You know, if I think about it too much, I get a bit overwhelmed, but it's just it's a different time.
We'll get off the subject of TikTok and get back on the subject of Nights, which your performance of this song today just blew us all away.
Thank you.
And Sarah, before we go, you did mention you were a film geek. I know that we could have another half hour conversation on movies.
Yeah.
But I do want to ask you, if you could rescore any film that you love from past and bring it into Sarah Kinsley world.
No, I can't do this.
What film do you wish you could rescore?
Just to slightly change your question, because this is way too much pressure.
Okay.
If there is a score I wish I had come up with or had played a part in, I recently watched Phantom Thread, and that score is incredible.
That's Johnny Greenwood, right?
It is Johnny Greenwood. Yeah. And I watched I Saw the TV Glow recently and thought the score was really moving. And Pride and Prejudice, because why not?
Which version?
The Keira Knightley version.
The Keira Knightley version. I love that
obviously
version.
Yes. Yeah.
We could talk
about easy choice.
Matthew McFadden another time. Best Darcy in my estimation. But
yeah,
that's a whole other conversation. Sarah Kinsley, what a pleasure to meet you. The new album, your debut album, that feels good to say, is Escaper. And congratulations on all you've achieved.
Thank you. It's really
lovely to have you here. And we're going to wrap up with Nights on FUV Live Sessions. Thank you so much.
Doesn't make a difference how you're spinning, you're still spinning round for three. With all your brilliance and good decisions, you still end up crying to sleep. By the TV, to the floor, to the kitchen, waking up in a new position. And you see me, will you stop? Forgiven. It doesn't make a difference if you start kissing me. No, it doesn't make a difference if you stop kissing me. You might as well kill me. You might as well kill me. You might as well kill me. You might as well to the street, to the lights in the city scene, to the nights in the beach, to the cries and the taps, it'll be alright. To your friends and the good guys, to the nines and the alibis, to the drinks and the free rides.
the lies and the party drugs, face down in the kitchen row, wondering how to cut off my tongue. To the nights we're too young, too dumb, too in love, to push the no out of our lungs.
That was Sarah Kinsley performing and in conversation at WFUV in New York City. A big thank you to Sarah for joining us in the studio and to Verve Forecast and DECA UK. Thanks to our WFUV audio team, including Jim O'Hara and Nadia Garriga. Our FUV live studio sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Our associate producer for this episode was Catherine Sherman. Megan Aftermat is our executive producer. Our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV Live Sessions wherever you get your podcasts so you can listen to new episodes and find your next favorite artist or band. New episodes drop every Monday. You can also catch audio and video of FUV Live Sessions at WFUV.org. FUV Live Sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm your host and producer for this episode, Kara Manning.